Bill had not yet reached the level where he had that kind of knowledge. Each new step that the aliens took Bill through, they allowed him time to adjust. Some lessons required more time than others. The idea of taking a healthy human being and making him or her ill was the tougher lesson he had to endure. The journey Bill was told he would be going to another planet for 2 months and that he should make arrangements with his family and the committee. His wife was acclimated to the level of security he worked under and accepted his word that he could not disclose where he was going. But she was a bit perplexed that he would be unable to have communications with her and the children for that length of time. In the past he always found ways to communicate with her. The committee members, who saw very little of Bill anyway, were indifferent about his sabbatical. His superiors were excited about his going and asked if the aliens would let him take a film camera with him. He told them that he didn't need to ask the aliens about that, he knew the answer. Bill did not need to physically be present with the aliens for them to give him answers or instructions. All he needed was to have a question on his mind. If it was pressing, he received the answer instantly. While Bill was away, the committee members that had made the leap into the strange world of body swapping decided they needed to make a few discoveries on their own, without Bill. In reality, the committee had few other choices. It was either that or disband the operation, since it was obvious to their superiors that they were adding little to the program compared to Bill's contributions. Tim alluded to the fact that perhaps they were ignored by the aliens because of their hesitation to embrace the freaky ETs. Many in the program lived in terror of the aliens and the ship with its thousands of paranormal alien devices. Their apprehensions interfered with their abilities to understand and make use of what the aliens put into their hands. Although Tim had the most respect for Bill, he still felt that Bill needed some competition from them. Why should they be Bill's lackeys? Tim asked his colleagues. Tim was certain the committee as a whole would make more progress if they were running on more than one cylinder. Bill was the only cylinder that was consistently firing concerning alien knowledge. The rest of the committee was along for the ride. They needed to fire up their own cylinder. Tim had an idea on how to do it. His plan was that the four of them that had crossed over the paranormal line by entering the bodies while in the incubator room needed to forge a little further into that mysterious rabbit hole. He suggested they make a bold move and go on a mission off the base while inhabiting the bodies. As expected, he found little enthusiasm among the other three men for that adventure. The rest of the committee thought it was risky to enter the bodies without the aid of Bill, and did not like the idea of taking the bodies far from the ship or off the base. Tim reminded his associates that they were stifled by fear. He was willing to take the risk and wanted to know who else was going to move ahead with him. The problem that Tim faced was that most in the committee had become completely dependent on Bill, even though they despised him. A few of the committee believed that the aliens were not there to monitor their activities when Bill was not around, which was a relief but also a concern. Tim disagreed. He had an indescribable feeling that the aliens were not only watching them during their experiments on and off the ship, but were present with them in the room during committee meetings, and that the ETs were silently placing ideas and strategy into the minds of the members. It was during one such meeting that Tim got a strong feeling that he would have an encounter with the aliens. Soon after, Tim found himself inside a spacecraft. The craft was nothing like Bill described it. In fact, it was so fantastic that he was convinced he would not be able to describe it correctly to the committee. The aliens told him that Bill never was on that particular craft, and that was partly why he could not describe it. The real reason that Bill nor Tim or any human cannot fully remember the inside of an alien craft is because some alien ships are in a constant state of flux. The changes were subtle and few humans ever noticed the transformations taking place in front of their eyes. The environment that Tim was in while in the ship altered continuously, yet he was oblivious to the changes. Tim was on the ship less than 1 hour, but for him that night was the longest in his life. The aliens revealed more to him on his first conscious abduction than they did to Bill. Tim had benefited from what Bill had already learned and was able to take in more information because of the mentoring from Bill. Tim did not see the exterior of the craft, but from what he observed of the interior, the ship was very large. It easily surpassed the size of 2 football fields on the level he was on, and there were many levels. Unlike some of the shows on television and the movies, he didn't see aliens scurrying about the ship, or lounging around in an interstellar tavern. Apparently these aliens remained in seclusion. Aliens didn't seem inclined towards coffee breaks and gossiping about co-workers or doing lunch. Alien lifestyle is light years different from how humans interact and carry on daily activities. The size of the craft indicated to Tim that there had to be hundreds of aliens on board the spaceship. He asked but didn't get a response for what purpose that ship served. It didn't appear that it was used for ferrying humans around because he had not seen any humans. It was possible that just as he was unaware of the changing features of the craft, that he was also unaware of all the aliens and humans on the spaceship. During his exploration of the ship, he saw on several occasions aliens in the distance, but once he arrived at the place where he thought he saw them like a mirage, there was nothing there. He remembered that the craft had a huge inner court with a large atrium that was about 11 stories high. At the top was a clear bubble dome that was like a window to the universe. The glass dome appeared to magnify the size and brilliance of the stars and galaxies. The ship was not in motion, or at least Tim didn't think it was. If it was, Tim felt no sensation of movement. Looking out through the top of the massive structure, the view of Earth with its single moon was exquisitely spectacular. The only other time Tim felt nearer to heaven was while vacationing in Europe and visiting some of the massive Gothic churches. The ship he was in reminded him of those magnificent buildings with their dazzling profusion of arches and columns. The only thing missing was the motifs and paintings from the Renaissance masters. Many of the designs in the spaceship were unfamiliar to him, yet very impressive. Judging from the decor, the aliens definitely had a deep appreciation of beauty. The atrium glass made it appear that the stars and the planets drifted inside of the ship, or perhaps they were holographic images. He was unable to distinguish. It was a wonderfully perplexing experience, he told his envious crew. While marveling at the stars and in a state of bliss, the alien that had summoned Tim to the ship made his approach. The being announced his arrival telepathically before appearing, to minimize the shock on Tim. Tim remained relaxed. What helped Tim keep his composure was the fact that the alien revealed to him the many previous encounters he had with the extraterrestrials. The alien triggered something in Tim's memory that unlocked a parallel life he never suspected existed. Tim had known the aliens since childhood. Mixed in with mind-expanding experiences and the joyful reunion of past memories were horrific and disturbing revelations as well, but Tim did not elaborate. Tim fought hard to remain calm as he became more aware of his dance through life with these strange creatures. He was grateful for the telepathic mode of communication because it kept his voice from breaking and his teeth from chattering had he been expected to verbalize his thoughts. That lack of control bugged Tim. He was proud of his fearlessness throughout his life, and few things scared him in life, as did that alien encounter. Tim, as is true for many humans, falsely believes that control resides with them, each of us, but he learned differently that day. That encounter proved to him the absolute fantasy of that belief. The next day, Tim briefed the committee about his contact with the aliens. The aliens assigned him a task, which involved 4 of the committee members entering into the Frankenstein bodies. They were instructed to go to a house located in one of the suburbs of a large city not far from the base. The name of the city was deleted from the report. For the assignment, they used a van disguised with a phone company logo and equipped to carry certain alien gadgets from the alien craft. There was no list given to Tim by the aliens on what he needed to take on the mission. The aliens told Tim that he would intuitively know what to bring on their mission when he entered the craft. Tim informed the members that they did not need to worry about using the equipment to transfer themselves out of their bodies and into the Frankenstein ones. The aliens would do the transfer incognito and monitor Tim's crew while they ventured off the base. Once again, the committee members were miffed for being excluded from direct contact with the aliens. They were in deep concerning the alien phenomena, and if Bill and Tim could handle it, why not the rest of them? Full disclosure could not be any more horrific than the living dead bodies they stored in the ship, or any weirder than the alien gadgets that had maimed some of them. Two of the military guys on the committee had seen the aliens when the Air Force first came in possession of the craft back in 1947. Although, they only saw them from behind thick glass and for a brief moment before the aliens were whisked away by another secret government agency. Tim actually had an answer for his colleagues. He told them that the aliens only showed themselves to humans that had gone through a series of preparations. It was a process similar to human inoculations that are given periodically to increase immunity from viruses or other contagions. The committee members wishing contact needed to have their shots before they were allowed further awareness and alien contact. If the series of inoculations, alien encounters, are successful, the aliens place that individual into a higher category. That category determines if and to what extent a human can participate with the aliens. There are hundreds of such programs where humans participate and do jobs for the aliens. But only a fraction of humans get to the stage that Bill and Tim operate with full disclosure. The aliens themselves don't know with certainty which humans will emerge from the immunization process, and if they do, at what level they will be placed in the program. Therefore, who in the committee, if anyone, would be next to cross that threshold was anyone's guess. Tim was told that the inoculations, for lack of a better word, were to protect the minds of the humans and to a lesser degree the physical bodies. The aliens emitted energy that could damage human tissue and impede the human psyche. In some cases, the energy the aliens radiated triggered psychosis in humans. There were other elements of the aliens and their craft that were harmful to humans, but the aliens did not disclose them to Tim. Primed for a mission, the aliens told Tim that his three colleagues who were previously primed for the bodies were on the craft the same night that he was taken. During the abductions, the aliens helped the three men get over their fear of the assignment they were prepped to carry out. Tim and his crew entered the bodies and then loaded up the van and headed to their destination. Tim was the only one with the knowledge of where they were going. It was a 4-hour drive from the base. They made 2 stops before they arrived at their destination. Although they did not require food or bathroom breaks, the aliens told Tim that they could eat and that the bodies functioned normally. After all, they were human bodies. Part of the experiment included mingling in public so that they could become comfortable with the bodies. After they arrived in the town of their destination, they rented a room at a motel. The next day they toured the city. The details of the mission were revealed to Tim during that day. This was a covert operation within a covert operation. The committee members who remained at the base and their superiors had no idea where Tim and the other three members were going or what it was they were going to do when they got there. All the committee members, as well as everyone involved with the program, had a chip embedded under their skin. That chip was the main key to keeping track of all personnel in the department. However, the bodies that Tim and the other three men inhabited had no such tracking devices embedded into them. It dawned on Tim that he and his crew were free from the watchful eye of his department for the first time in many years. There was no cleanup crew following them around other than the aliens, and they were free to do anything they desired. If Tim and crew messed up, or were involved in an accident, car or otherwise, the aliens would remove them from the scene in a split second with the added benefit of not having to kill them. Tim was told to familiarize himself with the streets and alleys that intersected with the house that they were to enter later that evening. It was daylight when they located the house. That gave themselves enough time to make plans on how they would carry out their objective without attracting attention. Working while inside the borrowed bodies was an incredible experience. The bodies did not require sleep or food and yet remained at optimum energy levels. As the four of them talked telepathically amongst themselves, the only regrets that any of them had was that they could not keep the bodies they were using. While in them they felt no pain, no fatigue and had no nagging desires for any earthly stimulants such as sex, drinking or smoking. Even those that smoked did not crave cigarettes. It was absolute freedom from the physical demands that human bodies impose on us. Later that evening, even though none of them knew what their mission was, they headed to their assignment. It was 3 o'clock a.m., when their van pulled into the driveway of the targeted house. The neighborhood was quiet, and most people were sleeping. The moon was full, the sky clear, and dogs barked in the adjacent yard. They took care not to make any additional sounds but did not interfere with the dogs and let them bark. They entered the house through the wall nearest to the driveway. Tim led the way. Somehow he knew which room inside of the house they were supposed to go to. Tim led them up the stairs, then entered the second bedroom that he came to. Tim instructed two of his cohorts to stay in the hall and watch for any occupants who might wake up and get out of bed. If anyone did leave their bedroom, it was the crew's job to stun the inhabitants with the alien wand and then put them back to bed. The four of them wore special shoes that were made of a sound-absorbing material that muffled creaking floorboards. The men communicated telepathically and made no sounds during the home invasion. Inside the room that Tim had entered was a young boy who had recently celebrated his first birthday. He was sleeping peacefully. Tim's job was to place a small object into his nose and one into his ear. Because it was a painful procedure, time had to paralyze the boy first. Tim knew that when he inserted the objects that the boy would awake and start screaming. While paralyzed, the boy would wake up, but be unable to scream or cry regardless of the pain. The boy did wake up but fell back to a sound sleep shortly after Tim completed the procedure, which took less than 2 minutes. Because of the boy's young age, they didn't have to administer amnesia to him. It was revealed to Tim during that procedure via a hidden memory that some humans were prone to develop something akin to an allergic reaction when they come in contact with aliens. When the aliens identify a human they are interested in that have such sensitivity, they enlist the help of humans like Tim, to provide a buffer as Tim was doing with that boy. By having humans make the first contact and inserting an alien antihistamine into the human's body, the aliens are free to come into contact with those individuals without causing them damage. The aliens have employed humans as intermediaries for thousands of years. Most people who are abducted do not need that procedure, but those requiring it number in the thousands. Seconds after Tim made the implants, three aliens appeared in the room. Tim had a feeling they might drop in. Nevertheless, it caught him off guard. There was no rehearsal for what took place, no plans or blueprints. Everything seemed to happen spontaneously. It was the best security system in the galaxy. No one could leak information because there was no information to get leaked. Tim received information telepathically, and it came to him at the very last moment that he required it. Although he felt that the aliens might show up, it was not part of the information that he was given. It was more like a hunch. Tim knew that the moment the aliens showed up that his job was completed and that he and his companions needed to leave the area immediately. Tim did not know what took place in the boy's room after the aliens entered and he and his crew departed. He assumed that the aliens took the boy to their spaceship where he experienced his first of many more to come, abductions. On the way back to the base, Tim told his three companions that the aliens appeared in the room as they were leaving. He asked them if any of them were aware in any way that the aliens showed up. None of them picked up on the aliens' energy vibrations, nor were they aware of the aliens at all. Back on the base, the discussion centered on their borrowed bodies and how they wished they could keep them. What they had accomplished on their mission was not talked about and was treated as if it never happened. None of them wanted to re-enter their own bodies. It was like giving up a finely tuned racing machine and going back to the old worn-out family station wagon. It took time for them to readjust to their old bodies. The fatigue, the muscle aches, hunger pangs, and they needed their coffee breaks back. During the mission, their bodies were kept in the incubator room attached to a system that was similar to cryonics that suspended bodily functions. Tim asked the aliens what the drawbacks were if a human remained inside the alien-modified human body for a month or more. They told him that if he or any human remain inside those bodies more than a few days, the return to their own body would be devastating. Tim was told that it was not permissible for them to permanently move into a resurrected dead body, neither could they be fitted with an alien organ device. The reasons were simple. Earth would be utopia if such things were allowed. Tuning Earth into utopia was not on the aliens' schedule. Whether it ever would be in the future was not for them to disclose. Clones. Tim asked the aliens about clones and whether the aliens clone people. They told him that there are many clones on this planet. Aliens that take human form are not using the empty shells of expired humans, they use human clones. They clone from cells taken from abducted humans like Bill and Tim. Tim told them that he's never run into a copy of himself and was not sure how he would react if he did. The aliens reassured him that since there is over 6 billion people on this planet, that his chances of running into himself were slim to none. The aliens divulged to Tim in what capacities the clones were used. They showed him how one alien was able to operate several clones at the same time using mind control. Each clone could be made to perform a separate task, or work in unison like robots. Clones were used as laborers to do mundane and dangerous work, digging trenches, building functional infrastructure for villages, or working in or around nuclear and other exotic sources of energy that aliens use for a host of reasons. The aliens used clones for warfare and as formidable armies, especially in ancient times, but also in modern times. Because the clones look and act like the indigenous humans, the aliens are able to place them anywhere in the world without anyone taking notice. The clones are neither robots nor humans, they have no soul and they can't function on their own. Souls can be inserted into clones, but that is not a common practice. The clones are under the influence and guidance of one or more aliens who act as shepherds for the flock, or commanders over an army. The clones could be used and made to function like robots, but it's simpler to use humans with full mental capacity for jobs that require more than a zombie. Humans are brought into the program just as Bill and Tim were, because they can function on their own, and if need be, at the discretion of the aliens. During a subsequent encounter, Tim learned a little more about the aliens and was shown some of them. The primary aliens, those on the front line of human contact, were asexual. Among them there are beings that looked as if they fit one sex or the other, but it was not made clear to Tim if they were functioning as sexual beings or if it was only window dressing. Some aliens looked like they were a patchwork of spare parts, real examples of the mythological human Frankenstein. There were short, tall, fat and skinny aliens. Some were pale, gray, black, blue, and metallic in color. The various aliens walked, flew, hovered and were capable of outlandish calisthenics. There were humanoids that had human features and were hybrids, human, alien. Some aliens looked exactly like humans, but they never communicated with Tim, therefore he was not sure if they were human or alien. The aliens told Tim that they are one of many different types of extraterrestrial species visiting Earth. There are layers of other aliens that are above them and below them in rank, all with their own special tasks to carry out on this planet and throughout the solar system. Back from Utopia, Bill returned from his 2-month hiatus and found the committee swamped with material they received from Tim's alien encounters. The committee was busy interpreting and categorizing Tim's work and had forgotten that Bill was on leave. However, Bill was not out of the loop as some had believed. Bill was kept up to date of Tim's evolving status with the aliens. He even had an active part in engineering it while he was away. He gave the committee plenty of time to assimilate the new data from Tim before burdening them with more from his enlightenment of the past month. He told them that he needed to spend time with his family and would return after a vacation with his family. His 2 children were in college and he spent a weekend with them. Then he and his wife went on ocean cruise. He never divulged exactly what he did at work to his wife, and curiously, she never pried into his business affairs. She was a petite, shy woman who kept to herself most of the time and did volunteer work at the local hospital. Her and Bill were exact opposites. He was outgoing and loved to mingle at parties. She preferred to stay home and read or do needlework. However, Bill had changed after his encounters with the aliens. Bill was no longer the extrovert he once was. He was pensive and more relaxed about life and shunned away from social events and other public gatherings. He stopped going to many of the important meetings he was invited to by the committee. There was nothing he could learn from the committee and few things he could share with them, so he spent more time at home. At the work when he did show up, he only spoke when he had something to convey to the committee. The rest of the time he sat quietly and pretended to listen to the other members who were speaking. There was no more idle chat from him, something his trusted colleagues missed, because he was the one with all the good jokes and juicy stories. Bill discovered that storytelling was a double-edged sword. His reputation for telling tall tales in the past cost him some credibility in his early years with the program, and some colleagues remained critical of his alien contact claims. Even though he was a kidder, his friends and colleagues had a deep respect for him. His knowledge and ability to grasp and understand complicated concepts astonished everyone who knew him. He was talkative most of his adult life and only changed after his first few contacts with the aliens. His personality changed drastically after that, and his knowledge seemed to quadruple every day. His colleagues nicknamed him Spock, after the Star Trek character. Unlike Spock, Bill showed compassion for all people, especially for those who came in contact with him, but he did maintain a strictly business mentality. Bill's wife told him that while he was away, she did not miss him at all. She was not being sarcastic. She said she felt his presence the whole time he was gone. It was as if he never left. Bill could not tell her that she was with him the whole time. An alien hybrid had taken on her looks and personality and was left in her place. Because she rarely visited with anyone, it was not a challenging problem. Bill asked the aliens if he could take her along with him, and they had one condition: that she would not be allowed to remember, and that Bill could not tell her that they went on a journey together to another planet. Bill agreed, although he would have preferred that this trip be the vacation of a lifetime for the two of them. It was more important that his wife be with him and not home alone. While they were on their earthly vacation, Bill's wife told him about a strange dream she had while he was away. She told him that they were at a weird and wonderful place, just the two of them, the kids were not with them. It was like another planet. She knew that because it had more than one sun. The planet had three suns, all different sizes. One sun was a little bigger than the sun the Earth rotates around, the other two were much smaller but brighter than a full moon. 12 moons circled the planet, each one a different color and size. The moons were inhabited with vast cities and millions of magnificent buildings. Some large enough to be visible from the planet, and people could travel without much effort to any of the moons. And she and Bill did. The cities she saw can only exist in dreams, their beauty surpassed reality. She told Bill, the cities sparkled like diamonds, the streets like emeralds. The food was heavenly, and it was the first time she remembered taste and smells from a dream. Like the cities, the food was incredibly delicious. It had to be a dream. Food isn't that good on this planet. She wished she could share that dream with him. It was so hard to describe how wonderful it made her feel. Had she not known better, she'd swear it was real and not a dream. Bill was surprised how much they allowed her to remember about the trip she was not aware she went on. He thought that the aliens were going to mask what had taken place with something that fit more into the earthly mode of dreams. He was pleased that they gave her that gift. It turned out as he wished. They got their fantasy vacation after all. Nevertheless, they blocked much of what she experienced, otherwise her ability to live a normal life on this planet would be difficult. Some activities were so fantastic that both Bill and his wife had to be sedated to keep their senses from overloading. They had to wear special bodies that were suited to the alien environment. Bill and his wife's bodies remained on a ship back in Earth's solar system. Night and day occurred on certain moons, but was nothing like on Earth. The planet they visited had mostly sunny days due to the three stars. Each moon was a unique wonderland of adventure. One moon was a botanical marvel with thousands of acres of lush rainforest harboring numerous species of orchids and various exotic plants and flowers. Some moons were like theme parks, others year-round winter wonderlands with ski slopes and other wintertime activities. Other moons hosted zoological parks with millions of animal groups in natural habitats.